All right, we are back. September 25th, 2023. WWE Raw just went off the air. A lot of rinse and repeat, but I tell you, today actually seemed like a much better placement of matches tonight. Main event, you know, kind of pretty much the same. Turned everything into a major clusterfuck at the very end, and that always gets everybody's interest going. I just wonder if that's going to lead to a tag team title match at Fastlane. You have Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso. We have Damian Priest and Finn Balor. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just got their rematch and lost. So I'm wondering if this is... You know, with JD McDonagh still lingering, you know, you almost kind of think we may end up with a six-man tag, which honestly is better suited for Raw. But at least we got a couple of matches announced tonight for Fastlane, because going into today, we had a goose egg. And Fastlane is next weekend. Next week are the go-home shows for Fastlane. And as of right now, three matches announced, technically two, but the third one will be made official next week. Another match, I think, will be changed by the time we get to Friday. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I want to welcome everyone to your Raw Post Show for the 25th of September. I am Don Tony. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Just a quick plug for those that are interested, because tomorrow is going to be a pretty busy night. First off, if you are interested, you could join me for the NXT Watch Party. It is playback.tv/Don Tony Show. It is free. We're going to bring it back again tomorrow. Some have been asking about Friday for SmackDown. Maybe, because, you know, the turnouts have not been as spectacular as we expected, and that's why we haven't been doing Fridays. But Tuesday's been okay. So NXT tomorrow, solid night, as you can see. We'll get into the preview a little bit later. And then after that, my ass is going to be numb tomorrow, because immediately after that watch party, Kev Castle and yours truly will be doing another special episode of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show. It'll stream live on Patreon for those that are our Patreons, patreon.com/DonTony. If you are not a Patreon, no worries. It'll be on DonTony.com on Wednesday, so you could definitely access that. And by the way, you know, for the last 2 weeks, I've been telling everyone, if you really, truly support the shows, download the audio episodes at DonTony.com, because that's what keeps what I do alive. Not only that, it keeps me in the hunt. You know, as far as stats go, you know, when people look to see, like, hey, what's some good wrestling shows out there? You know, when my numbers are very divided between YouTube and Patreon and other outlets, and then you got audio and you got video, you know, it's not everything is in one source. And you guys have been delivering the last 2 weeks. How's about that, my friends? Right smack in the middle of Sam Roberts, we see Matt Hardy, Conan, the Snake Pit, Dutch Mantel. Yeah, we are back in the top 40. Love it. Love it. Keep doing it. That helps keep what I do alive. After all these years, you know, competing with a lot of the bullshit that's out there. Did you see that horrible stuff that came out today about Triple H and Stephanie separated and maybe filing for divorce? I didn't even tweet about it, because, you know, it's funny, the people out there that claim they can't stand this clickbait fake shit, but yet they'll always tweet about it because, you know, they want them to be part of the numbers as well. If you really find something disgusting, you do not write about it. You do not tweet it. You do not comment about it on paper. You could talk about it, because it doesn't show up in a search result, but you absolutely will not see that in my notes. Also, you know, are you also a little bit surprised? I mean, I know it's more of the business wire. Is it because Vince McMahon is really not a majority owner anymore? The WWE stock, which is now under the banner TKO at the stock market, TKO Group Holdings, That stock is down 20% in the last 2 weeks. That's billions of dollars. 20%, one-fifth of WWE's worth flushed down the toilet. When the merger was completed, the stock, I believe, was at $103 a share. Now it's down to just a drop above 80. How come nobody is talking about that? That is billions. Billions. Nobody's talking about it. I don't get it. But I do have something that I definitely want to share with you. You know, it is big news because with WWE inking the TV deal, bringing SmackDown to the USA Network starting October next year, Raw and likely NXT are pretty much gone from USA Network. It'll be a shocker. And let me tell you why even more. And we've talked about this a little bit over the weekend, but let me tell you right now why it would be a shocker if WWE would keep Raw and NXT on the USA Network. I'll tell you why. Because WWE just inked $287 million a year for USA Network for SmackDown. That comes out to $1.45 billion for, you know, five-year deal. And SmackDown is only 2 hours. So now you're going to negotiate 5 hours of programming. So now if SmackDown got $287 for 2 hours, how much do you think WWE would possibly demand for 5 hours? You think the USA Network is going to pay more for Raw and NXT? I know what you're going to say. NXT is doing great right now, and that's 5 hours of programming. But look at this. This is what happens with a publicly traded company. And this is not a knock on Tony Khan, but if Tony Khan, if this was a privately owned company, not in the stock market, and Tony Khan, just for the love of pro wrestling and wanted to stay on the network, Tony Khan could negotiate a really dumb deal to keep all the programming on WarnerMedia, it doesn't affect nothing. You might get a pay-per-view every 2 or 3 weeks. I can't believe we're already having another AEW pay-per-view, what, this weekend? But, you know, WWE, when it's a publicly traded company, you have to answer about the bottom dollar. You know, when you see these releases and people are like, oh, they're making record profits. No, 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 no. I respect a lot of people in the media world as far as wrestling goes. But they got this so freaking wrong. They all just jumped on the, you know, people rolled their eyes when Vince McMahon said they made this move because WWE business is becoming stagnant. I'm telling you guys, it's right in front of your eyes. The stock is down 20%. The ratings are dropping. The Saudi Arabia deal, and look at the TV deal they just announced, bringing SmackDown back to the USA Network. If WWE financially, if everything looked rosy for the future, why do you think the stock would be down billions right now? You think investors give a shit that WWE released 20 stars? None of them that seem to be generating any profits for WWE at all? No, it is a big deal. And what I wanted to give you tonight, I'm sure a lot of you saw the thumbnail. I tried to be a little bit creative with it. This satires, it mimics the WWE draft because Amazon Prime is obviously one of the top front runners to possibly get Raw and NXT. And I would think WWE would do it as a package. I can't see WWE being on three different networks. I think that's overkill. So Raw and NXT will probably be a package. But look at what I noted on the left. 2018 was the last time WWE had a TV deal. When they jumped and brought SmackDown to Fox and Raw, you know, re-upped on the USA Network. Since 2018's TV deal, Raw is down 44% in the ratings. SmackDown is down only 7%. And a few of you actually challenged my numbers. Well, I decided, let me become prepared. So for those on video, you know, look, if you're on audio, you don't need to research this. Just the 44% and the 7% is really what you got to concern yourself about. But for those that are curious, this is SmackDown's ratings from January 2018 to May 2018. And they are side by side from 2018 to the present. And as you can see, these numbers are pretty steady. You know, for example, March 26th of 2018, they drew 2.57 million viewers. 5 years later, they drew 2.484. So you look at this up and down, these numbers are pretty similar. This is 2018 on the USA Network and 2023 on Fox. Now you go from May until the present. And you look at SmackDown in 2018, and you see this is way before the NFL returned. Look at the numbers in May, and look at the numbers in September. You don't see that much of an effect as far as the ratings. Now, yes, you know, SmackDown is on a different night as far as NFL goes, but even the interest in WWE and SmackDown stood pretty consistent. So you look at those numbers compared to 2023, they are very, very consistent. In 2018, between January 1st to right now, September 22nd, well, 25th, 2023, in 2018, SmackDown averaged 2,494,000 viewers. Now in 2023, they're averaging 2,307,000 viewers. That is a 7% drop. Not that bad, especially when you realize, you know, people like, oh, you know, people don't watch like they used to. They use streaming media. They go on Hulu and YouTube and this and that. Not much of a change. Well, look at Raw now. And this is pretty startling. Here is Raw from January of 2018 to May of 2018. And look at all of those shows that did 3.3 million, 3.6 million, 3.9 million, 4.5 million is an exception to the rule. Look at these numbers. There are weeks here where Raw is almost 50% of what it was from 5 years ago. There's no NFL influence on these. Look at these numbers. It is mind-boggling how much it has gone down. Look at January 15th, the week of January 15th. There's no major things going on at that time. Raw did 3,250,000 in 2018. This year it did 1,489,000. And then the following week with the Royal Rumble bump, WWE did 4.5 million in 2018, and they did 2.3 million in 2023. Now we go to the second part of the year so far. And this is where we are right now. 5 years ago, during NFL preseason, Raw was scoring 2.6, 2.7, 2.8 million. Now they're scoring 1.3 to 1.7 million for 1 week. Look at those numbers. Now you think to yourself, if I'm the USA Network, hey, I'm going to bring SmackDown to my channel because SmackDown's ratings have not moved all that much. Look at Raw. How could anybody say to me that Raw is going to demand a bigger number because it's 3 hours compared to two? That third hour kills Raw. If we eliminated hour three for Monday Night Raw, these ratings would be a hell of a lot better. These would be a hell of a lot better because hour three is a killer many, many weeks. Look at the difference. So now when you understand SmackDown going to USA Network, if the USA Network was going to work out a deal with Raw and NXT as well, they would not have issued the press release already about SmackDown. There was no rush to put it out there. They would have just held it. So you got to be concerned because, number one, we don't know where Raw and NXT is headed. And number two, we may not see Raw on Monday nights anymore. That's not clickbait. I don't even have it on my synopsis. You will not see me write for tonight's show. Raw may move to a different night. I won't do that. But that is definitely something being discussed. For the right price, WWE will move Raw, maybe to Tuesdays. NXT could very well go back to Wednesdays. The Wednesday night war could return. You know, when NXT's doing 600, 700,000 viewers, 550, 600,000, do you think that they are extremely damaged because they're going up against AEW? They actually did pretty decent, even though AEW won. AEW should win every week. Look at their roster. You know, you think NXT would draw 72,000, whatever, 35 in Wembley? NXT wouldn't do that, even if it is a happening. So NXT shouldn't defeat AEW, but that is definitely something to think about. So I wanted to show it to you because things like this, nobody is really paying attention to, you know, and it's a big deal. It's a real big deal. And let me say one last thing in conclusion. If SmackDown's TV deal caused the stock to go down 16% last week, you imagine what kind of TV deal or the stock will be affected if Raw's TV deal is underwhelming? SmackDown at least has been holding its own. Yes, you got the Bloodline. Yes, you got Roman Reigns. Yes, you got the hottest storyline in the last, you know, decade or two. So over 5 years, Raw has pretty much been steady. And the stock still went down 16%. I can only imagine what the fuck is going to happen when this Raw deal comes. Somebody's going to have to overpay. That is the only way that stock doesn't tank further. And just imagine how TKO must feel that the stock is down billions and nobody's talking about it. Speaking of talk, and we'll talk about Raw in a few moments. I want to get into a couple of news tidbits. Fun history episode this week. Got some great memories that I think you're all going to love. And we got a couple of sound bites today that I promise you, some of you are going to laugh. Some of you probably never heard them before. We have a couple of interesting debuts this week in history. In fact, today is actually the 41-year anniversary that Jim Cornette made his managerial debut. I got a soundbite from today, 41 years ago. I'm going to share with you in a little bit. But before we talk about a couple of things, I want to share this one for you because I know you morbid motherfuckers out there with your disdain towards Hulk Hogan, brother, you'll probably get a kick out of this. Hulk Hogan got married over the weekend. His third marriage. Hulk Hogan got married to a woman named Skye Daly. She apparently is a yoga instructor. A few people told me she was a Scientologist. She's 45 years old. Hulk Hogan is 70. Not as big of an age discrepancy that you would think. So Hulk Hogan at his wedding. The reports going around is that the rings cost $500,000. The rings may have cost $500,000, but the wedding ceremony probably cost $5,000. Because Hulk Hogan, Before the priest could leave the fucking building, he's got somebody posting on social media this video highlights of his wedding. And I got it. I can't play the audio, but I'm going to show you the video. Now, when you see this video, it's only about a minute long. Some of it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But just take notice of all the people who attended. Let's look on the screen. There's Hulk getting ready. There's his wife getting ready. She looks like someone. I can't put my eyes on it. You know what? You know who she looks like? I just realized it. You know who she looks like? Who is that chick? Oh, this is going to be sound morbid. Let me freeze it when I find the spot. Who is that chick that, brunette, who unfortunately her young little daughter passed away. And the allegations is that she got rid of the daughter so she could go partying. And she ended up being not guilty. This was like 10, 15 years ago. Brunette, younger girl. She like used to go out partying. Casey Anthony. She looks like an older Casey Anthony with blonde hair. She looks like kind of like Casey Anthony. But anyway, let's continue. Let's see more of the video. So there they are. But I want you to pay attention how many people are in attendance. Okay, watch the ceremony. Watch walking down the aisle. Nick is there. Nick Bollea is there. You will see Nick in a second. Look, there's like one row of people. Look, there's nobody there. There's nobody there. There's like six people there. Look at this. It. You know what that? You know what that looks like? That looks like the scene in Goodfellas where Joe Pesci got whacked in the basement. Tell me that doesn't look like that somebody's basement. Look at the. It's a beautiful video. They're exchanging the vows, and there's five people in attendance, and Nick is there, and they are now husband and wife. I say this with the utmost sincerity. Congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Bollea. There you go. I don't know who they're like posing in front of other than a photographer and like five or six people. They're like, nobody showed up. That's it. So anyway, and I haven't seen anything with a wedding reception. I don't even know if they did have a wedding reception. Did we hear any reports of people getting drunk and acting stupid? No, I don't think so. Brooke Hogan was not there. Brooke was not there. And honestly, I don't think anybody outside of maybe some media, like TMZ, gave a shit about it. But for some reason, Brooke Hogan thought that this was a major news story that she needed to address. So Brooke Hogan put a statement out there as to why she did not attend her father's wedding. And she says, and I quote, "As many of you know, I value my privacy. But unfortunately, a lot of media outlets are making assumptions as to why I did not attend my father's third wedding." Now, listen to that wording. Any of you out there, if any of your parents remarried, would you actually like throw the number out there? But anyway, she continues to say, "Instead of leaving it to speculation, I decided to better shut it down here. As we all, listen closely, as we all experience this with our own families, the dynamics of a family unit continuously changes throughout the years. With that being said, my family has experienced a lot of change. With all of it happening in the public eye, I've had to learn how to best navigate those changes as they come, which has been very difficult to say the least. For my own journey to healing and happiness, I have chosen to create some distance between myself and my family. And I am focusing on people and things that heal my heart and align with my personal beliefs, goals, and values. I wish him well." I live in Queens, New York. And honestly, if anybody from the neighborhood said, "Hey, my daughter didn't go to my wedding, and this is the fucking statement she put out," anybody in the neighborhood would say, "Your fucking daughter disowned you, motherfucker. Brooke wants nothing to..." Listen to that comment. "I am focusing on people and things that heal my heart. Your family? Oh, oof." Why does it feel that Brooke put that statement out there so there's more news? Doesn't it feel that way? Like if she didn't say nothing at all, it would have disappeared in 12 hours. I almost feel like she put that shit out there to like stick it in Hulk's heart. That's how it feels to me. So yeah, for all you people that don't like Hulk Hogan, he's probably sobbing. And yeah, it sounds like Brooke Hogan has disowned her father, disowned her family. My God, all you had to do is show up at a wedding for your dad. I've decided to distance myself. What did they ask you to do? Go on a two-week cruise? Wedding cruise to fucking Bermuda? That you had to be stuck on a ship with them for 2 weeks? You didn't fly to Florida. You do the ceremony, you fly back home. All right. If you are interested, there is a pretty good article out there with Mandy Rose. Yes, eye candy photo alert. She is on TMZ, and she's talking about her move to OnlyFans. And for all of you out there that think that Mandy Rose is going to return to professional wrestling anytime soon, understand that she is saying that OnlyFans is giving her life-changing money. Go to the TMZ article and read the interview they just did with Mandy Rose today. If you think Mandy Rose is leaving OnlyFans to return back to Toxic Attraction, I am a big fan of Mandy Rose. She improved tremendously. And as I've said before for these shows, whenever I reached out to the people in NXT and asked for a couple of autographed photos that I could give out on the shows, I always got photos from Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose, one of the most generous people out there. On the main roster, Liv Morgan, Shotzi Blackheart, two of the most generous as well. But if you read that interview, unless TKO is willing to let her continue her OnlyFans and have a WWE/NXT career, she ain't returning. And I tell you, you read this article, you can't help but to think, life-changing money. You know, let that sink in for a minute. Life-changing money. There's got to be some women out there that are working pro wrestling right now that got to be looking at Mandy Rose, who and they are so, you know, pretty attractive, and they must be saying to themselves, man, you know, I don't have to beat up my body. I could just model. And that's not easy either. Keeping your physique and everything being almost perfect, you know, it's not easy to do. What Mandy Rose does, you know, it's not easy to maintain that physique and almost, you know, just too perfect. I would not be surprised in the next 12 months we get a few women that leave professional wrestling to go to OnlyFans full time, or they work out a deal and they end up doing both. Now, I want to make this clear. Under no circumstances am I trying to hint that Valentina Feroz is going that route. But as we talked about on yesterday's sit down, and I wanted to mention it here since not everybody tunes into the Sunday Q&A format, Valentina Feroz, when we discussed all the releases on Saturday, and believe me, this is a cheap plug, I know it, but if you did not check out the show we did Saturday, getting into every single WWE release that went down, this is a must listen. We took our time. We got in, not only discussed each one, we talked about where they realistically could go. And I got something today that you're going to get a kick out of with regards to Matt Riddle. And Rick Boogs, obviously, became the center of the newswire. But when we discussed all the releases, the one person in NXT that we were baffled about the most was Valentina Feroz. We could not understand, of all the women that's on that roster, Valentina Feroz would not be one of the first you would think about, like, oh, get rid of her. She's improved significantly. Well, we found out over the weekend that she requested her release. And if you look at her statement online, and it's written in Spanish, but a lot of places translated it, it feels like she is, you will see her back in on your screens in some capacity sooner than later. I don't know if she just got fed up with, you know, just the status in NXT. I don't know. But she requested her release. So I wanted to just clear that up. Rick Boogs, we touched on it yesterday, but Rick Boogs has gotten a lot of press the last couple of days because he is very angry about his WWE release. He is claiming that there's a lot of backstage political play going on. Doesn't tease any names, I should add. And he says, he claims that somebody had a weird grudge against him. Now, as far as I know, Rick Boogs has a 90-day no-compete. He's getting paid for the next 90 days. As bitter as you are, they are giving you a quarter of a year's salary. And I guarantee you, even if you are on the bottom of the food chain in WWE, you are making a boatload more money than any of us and any people tuning in, period. You know, you're getting paid for the next 90 days. In my honest, and listen, if anybody checks out Saturday's show, I gave nothing but praise to Rick Boogs. The reason why I feel he was let go was more of the injury bug, because remember, his injuries were not just, you know, what you saw on TV 2 years ago. It goes well beyond that. But if I was him, I would just honestly just shut the fuck up. You know, you got 90 days of pay. Wait to the 90 days and then shit on WWE all you want. But he claims that somebody had a weird grudge against him backstage. He also said that Vince McMahon stepping down from WWE Creative in 2022 killed his career. Killed his career. And listen, again, Saturday, I gave praise. I enjoyed Rick Boogs on TV. But with all due respect, I go back to before Vince stepped down, when he actually could still work. And his biggest, like, claim to fame on TV was playing a guitar and going, Shinsuke Nakamura! Like, you didn't do shit outside of that to suddenly, like, what were you going to do, play guitar for the rest of your, look at Elias. I mean, just killed his career. That's what you thought your career was? To go, bang, you, what are you fucking Van? He looks like Van Hammer fucked. Well, no, we're not going to go there. Seriously, I just don't. He's bitter. But that guy was in WWE for a long time. I mean, take chicken shit and turn it into chicken salad. Showed him up. You know, don't make other companies feel like this guy's an asshole. Because I don't think Rick Boogs is an asshole. From what I have been told over a couple of years, he's a very likable, funny guy. Really, really bitter bitch. I don't get it. I don't get it. But I figured I'd share because a lot of you wanted me to talk about that. So got one more that is definitely worth bringing up. Listen, we love Uncle Dave. I support him. Still subscribe. Always have been appreciative of what he had done for me with some causes in the past. I don't agree with all of Dave's views. Sometimes he's on point, sometimes he's wrong, and sometimes he is flat out fucking stupid. Dave Meltzer said something today. If you can't read between the lines, I don't know if you could even like comprehend like what he's trying to do. And it has to do with Matt Riddle. Dave Meltzer went on his Observer Radio today and made the claim that no one in WWE management has anything bad to say about Matt Riddle, but he was comparing it to CM Punk. And in fact, I hate doing this live on the show, but I have to pull it up so you all could hear read the exact quote of what he said. All I got to do is just put Meltzer, Riddle, WWE, because I know that okay, here we go. Dave Meltzer, let's put today, put news. Okay, backstage. Okay, yeah, okay, here it is. Let me pull this up. Give me 1 second. I should have had this queued up, but let's just put Meltzer and Riddle. Here we go. Hey, this is the exact quote. I had to give you the exact quote. Quote, there's a lot of people with bad feelings in management about CM Punk within the WWE, but there's nobody in management with a bad feeling about Matt Riddle. Let that sink in for a minute. You had everybody in the media world claiming that Matt Riddle was let go because he is a problem. He is a public relations nightmare. And I do agree with a little of that. He's definitely hasn't helped his cause sometimes. I will admit that. But let that quote sink in. There are a lot of people within WWE management that has bad feelings for CM Punk. But there's nobody in WWE management with a bad feeling about Matt Riddle, my friends, we ain't fucking stupid. Doesn't that kind of sound like, since you waited until Matt Riddle to get re- I didn't hear him say that when Matt Riddle was off TV for a lot of personal issues early in the year. I don't remember him saying that when Matt Riddle first revealed that he was released. It was brought out today. Does that, am I wrong? Did I smoke some babanya? Did somebody slip something in my food that I didn't realize? Or does it sound like Dave Meltzer is trying to prime AEW fans that AEW would seriously like to have Matt Riddle in their company? To turn around and get, with all due respect to Dave Meltzer, how the fuck in 48 hours, especially when TKO Group Holdings now owns the majority, that you got from everybody within WWE management that nobody had a bet? You know what that almost feels like? You know what that almost feels like? My friends, I know this is a stretch, but here's a little breaking news. Nobody in WWE management, nobody in New Japan management dislikes me. Nobody in AEW management dislikes me. They don't fucking know me. Like, if nobody, I know that's an exaggeration, but my point is, if certain people, you think Vince McMahon, through a janitor, through Bruce Pritchard, through Buckteeth Dunn and others, you think Vince, through those people, gave to Dave Meltzer, I got no problem with Matt Riddle. I mean, that sounds like he is priming AEW fans to start getting used to that Matt Riddle's good. He's likable. WWE management, nobody had a problem with him. No, not at all. That certainly feels like it's trying to warm, because listen, on the surface, you know, if you jaywalked for a lot of AEW fans, you are not welcome in AEW, brother. You could fucking get a parking ticket. You're not allowed in AEW. There's a lot of people that don't like Matt Riddle. And this, why would you even compare Matt Riddle and WWE management to CM Punk? Explain that one to me. Explain it to me. Nobody will. But I just figured I'd throw that out there. Psycho believes Riddle will be back in the WWE. Yeah, I believe that. Just not right now. And there's, you know, again, there's a lot of things going on. And trust me, I will get some information from you. I already know a little bit, but there's certain things you don't put out there because it's personal. But I will tell you part of it. Matt Riddle is about to have a kid in about less than 3 months. And right now he's focused more on having a family. His kid's going to be born before his 90-day no-compete is up. So right now it's about getting your shit in order. And then what happens next year? You know, the people that are claiming that MMA is interested in Matt, suddenly they got all these connections in MMA. And MMA is like saying, like, baseball would be interested in bringing back blah, 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 blah. You know, name some fucking promotions, journalists. Matt Riddle is garnishing interest in MMA. Who? MMA is not a promotion. MMA is a form of sport. It's just like some of the goofs out there that actually said that TKO wants WrestleMania next year to be, oh, I can't remember the words, but it was a word that The Rock used when he talked to Pat McAfee 2 weeks ago. They literally copied right out of The Rock's mouth the words and claimed that their sources told them that TKO Group Holdings. Honestly, I think Dana White and TKO looks at all of these wrestling journalists with all due respect and probably said, look at these fucking, and I admit, that's what I think that they say. You think they respect anybody out there? Let's see any of TKO do interviews with these wrestling journals. Let's see that. Seriously. All right. Shut up, Miz. Shut up, Miz. Raw tonight. My friends, please. If anybody in WWE management here's my request. It's not my bucket list. It's not a dying wish. But if WWE saw the reaction from the fans today, please put Dragon Lee and Dominic Mysterio as a rematch for NXT No Mercy. I know most of us were looking forward to Mustafa Ali versus Dominic Mysterio, but oh my God, I know a lot of you are not high yet on Dominic Mysterio, but he and Dragon Lee, honestly, my friends, seriously, if that was an AEW Dynamite match tonight, if he had two or three more matches like that, he'd get the PWI El Hijo del Vikingo orgasm. Dragon Lee, you know, is just, I mean, we already knew because we watch him in NXT. The only reason why you don't get that kind of match out of Dragon Lee that often in NXT, and this is no shot on anybody on the NXT roster, it's common sense. The reason why you don't get that kind of match from Dragon Lee on that level like you saw tonight on Raw is because a lot of people that he wrestles in NXT are still growing. They're still learning their trade. Dragon Lee is not Rey Fénix through Wish. Like, hey, I want to order Rey Fénix, and you order Rey Fénix on Wish and you get Dragon Lee. Dragon Lee is the brother of Roosh. And Dragon Lee is legit. That guy is a badass motherfucker. And everybody tonight, that crowd, and I'm not saying it because Raw just ended. I will say it tomorrow. I will say it a month from now. And I will say it a year from now, and unless someone else comes along and changes my mind. Of all the NXT guest appearances who got a shot on Raw or SmackDown for even one night, whether it's Bron Breakker or Carmelo Hayes or Roxanne Perez or whoever you want to bring up, Dragon Lee blew them all out of the water. The match he had with Dominic Mysterio today, for Raw purposes, probably top five for match of the year. If they would have gone five more minutes, and I know that may not sound like a lot, but if they would have gone five more minutes, I don't think people would have stopped talking about it. That's how good this match was today. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I got this one shot. I mean, just picture him literally jumping up and diving over the top rope and giving a Hurricanrana to Dominic Mysterio to the outside of the floor. What I loved about this match, not just the in-ring quality, but what I loved about that match was that the crowd was into it. One thing I realized tonight, and this might sound bonkers to a lot of people, or it may make complete sense to all of you out there. Tonight's match with Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio and Dragon Lee made me realize how different AEW is many times over WWE. If you look at the WWE roster, if you look at their Raw matches, their SmackDown matches, even when Rey does what he does, even when Santos Escobar does what he does, you could put any high flyer that's on the WWE roster, you never hear the crowd making those reactions tonight like you did with Dominic and Dragon Lee. If you go back and you listen to, oh, oh, I sound more like Vinny the dog from Family Guy. Oh!
Knock, knock. Who's there? You blew it.
No, oh! The crowd tonight reacting to every move was so AEW to me. And I say that as a compliment. You're reminded how much of the high-flying clusterfuck you get in AEW. And many times it's awesome, and many times it's a hot mess. Tonight was beautiful. Yeah, I know, and Dave Meltzer probably give it 3.5 stars because it's not an AEW. But I'm telling you all, I'm not over-exaggerating it. Not even going to make a big deal about it in the synopsis notes. But if you didn't see this match tonight, go out of your way to watch it. You'll appreciate Dragon Lee, and you'll understand why he should be on the main roster. He will be on the main roster sooner than later. And it kind of, you know what sucks about it? and I think most of you will agree with me on this, and take it, this is from a big Dominic Mysterio fan. And, you know, my past praise for him speaks for itself. What sucks right now is that if it was up to me, Dragon Lee would have a rematch in NXT No Mercy and win that championship. Not even close. But because the Judgment Day got to hold all the gold except for the heavyweight championships, Dominic ain't losing that belt yet. Dominic is not going to be the only one without a title because of storyline purposes. And that fucking sucks. Because we had that for 2+ years with Roman Reigns before they decided to create a World Heavyweight Championship that Seth Rollins holds. And Seth Rollins has done a tremendous job with it, but it's kind of been put out there as to cover up that they're holding. Listen, Roman Reigns suddenly didn't become lazy, everyone. You know, people are comparing it to Brock Lesnar right now. You and I have been saying this for a year. We saw this a mile away, that WWE was going to start using Roman Reigns like Brock Lesnar. Not because Roman is broken down and beaten down and Roman does. No, it's because they want to hold their shots. They want to hold it in the bag. They want to keep as many bullets as they can in the pocket. So they don't want to blow their load. Plus, they're exposing right now. They'd had nothing outside of the Bloodline storyline. When Paul Heyman made that remark, which Cody Rhodes brought up tonight, that we're just at the bottom of the third inning, as much as we all love the Bloodline storyline, you and I even said, the fuck is Paul Heyman talking about? Bottom of the third inning? We're going to get five more years of this? I know, I'm exaggerating, but bottom of the third inning? I mean, what I truly believe, my friends, is that a year ago, remember, it was going to be Roman versus The Rock a year ago. Cody, obviously, you know, returning, that derailed it. But you know what that tells you? The WWE originally did not have long-term plans for the Bloodline storyline. The Bloodline storyline, Sami Zayn joined the Bloodline almost a year to today. It's pretty much the one-year anniversary of Sami Zayn joining the Bloodline. Remember when he held the shirt and he had that lovable, goofy face on his face when he had the shirt? A year and a half ago, they obviously had this Bloodline storyline. They never in their wildest dreams ever thought that it would take off the way it did. And what was happening was they were doing what you and I said even before a year earlier. Remember Clash at the Castle? And, you know, we knew Drew McIntyre was going to take on Roman. But they had to milk it 3 or 4 extra weeks. Oh, Sheamus shows up. I deserve the match. Drew and Sheamus are going to have the match. And I can't have the match. I have COVID. Or whatever Sheamus' excuse was. And it got postponed for an extra week. And you're like, why did it postpone for an extra week? And then they had the match. And then Drew won anyway. And then you realize, oh, they just added an extra. What do you think they did with Jey Uso on the Judgment Day, joining the Judgment Day storyline? As much as we enjoy Jey Uso right now, and Jey Uso, most of us have been saying Jey Uso was the MVP of the Bloodline storyline. Every person in the Bloodline was tremendous. Jimmy Uso was great. Roman Reigns was great. Paul Heyman, Solo Sikoa was great in his role. But Jey Uso was the one with his facial features and the reaction. Everything he did felt real. So we all enjoyed Jey Uso. But I got to say it. And honestly, I only took 2 or 3 screenshots from tonight's show. And one of them was this. Please stop with this Cody Rhodes brought Jey Uso to Raw storyline. Jey Uso did not murder anybody's family. Jey Uso did not run over your dog. Jey Uso did not fucking, cheat on, you know, with one of your spouses. This whole roster with this animosity and Cody Rhodes' obsession with Jey Uso, you didn't bring a homeless, abused pet to your house like we talked about yesterday, washed them, fed him, cleaned him, brought him to the vet, videoed everything so you could feel proud of yourself, and then show, look, everybody, I brought Jay here. Jay was nowhere. He's the one that said, oos out, deuces, ooses, loosey-goosey, whatever he said. You know, I'm starting to hate this storyline with Cody Rhodes bringing Jey Uso to Raw. People are acting like babies. I mean, Kevin Owens was the biggest dick to Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn was the biggest dick to Kevin Owens. Sheamus and Drew McIntyre were the biggest dicks towards each other. People have been assholes. People have been screwing people over. People have been cheating. And Jey Uso is so tremendously different that people are like, he's toxic. This is just getting, this is jumping the fucking shark. In my opinion, this is jumping the shark. Yeah, somebody said it's going to lead to war games. Yeah, it's gotta. And the thing is, that's why JD McDonagh is inserted in this a little bit, and that's why you have Jey Uso as the wild card. And but still, the premise of the storyline is dopey. I mean, Cody Rhodes is the ultimate babyface. You know, he did it again today to the California crowd. For everybody at home, please allow me, you know, please forgive me for turning my back on you. I want to acknowledge the live fans. And by the way, when Cody said tonight that Jey Uso coming to Raw means that somebody's being drafted to SmackDown, he can't do it now because it's too early. And he would come off more as a heel if he did it. But the storyline will be that Cody Rhodes will be the one drafted to SmackDown, which is very interesting because why would Cody Rhodes need to be drafted to SmackDown in order to feud with Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship at WrestleMania 40? Unless they just want him on TV every single week on SmackDown. But if he's winning the Royal Rumble, he's got the title match. But that little seed being planted, just randomly thrown out there. Because you know what's going to happen? A week from now, 2 weeks from now, a month from now, 2 months from now, you're going to say, how come WWE didn't draft anybody to SmackDown yet? Yeah, we all do that. So just randomly throwing it out there right now, in the future, months and months from now, Cody will say, do you remember tonight or that I said on Raw that somebody was going to be drafted? Well, that draft pick has been completed, and that draft pick is me. And it'll be done on SmackDown. So everybody loses their shit, and that's where it goes from here. But it is so far away. I'm being straight up honest. This angst about Jey Uso being on Raw is getting stupid. And it's jumping the shark. Jimmy Uso right now, I know maybe some of you will disagree with me. After 2 weeks, Jimmy Uso has done a better job in 2 weeks than Jey Uso has. It's not Jey Uso's fault. It's the storyline surrounding him. Jimmy Uso wants to be back in Bloodline. He's kind of like, Jimmy Uso's like? He's like somebody that got kicked out of the house, but he still has the house key. So he comes in and he acts like, you know, nothing is wrong, and he's making dinner and he's cleaning up and like, what is he doing here? You know, like, oh, no, hey, your Bloodline, you know, sit down. I just made dinner. And you're like, you're eating it. And you're like, hey, it's actually pretty good. But why is he still here? That's what Jimmy Uso is right now. But it's working. Why would Solo Sikoa just suddenly embrace brother or no brother, you know, with the storyline? Jimmy Uso, in the last 2 weeks, has done 1,000 times better with this storyline. And Roman Reigns has got to come back in the next 2 weeks, in my opinion. Roman Reigns, I believe, maybe 2 weeks from Friday, but within the next 2 or 3 Fridays, Roman Reigns will be back on TV. Has to. TV deal done with USA Network or not, he has to. They're not going to suddenly put Roman Reigns on Raw so they could spice up the TV deal. That was just dumb shit. When I saw people reporting like, oh, The Rock showed up on SmackDown to intensify the TV deals for one fucking week. And that backfired a little bit. And as we talked about over the weekend, when John Cena got his beatdown on Friday, fans weren't chanting, L.A. Knight, L.A. Knight. No, they were chanting, Rocky, Rocky. Sorry, guys. The Rock ain't coming back to help John Cena that fucking quickly. You know, people actually think that The Rock, and, you know, you'll realize a month from now, oh, it was a one-time deal. Speaking of John Cena, I don't know if you all saw this. This is the match that WWE has put out there today. At Fastlane, John Cena will have a handicap match against Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa. They're going to go one of two ways with this. If LA Knight is able to return by this Friday. Now, I actually spoke to someone today via DM about LA Knight, and apparently he feels a lot better. Some people told this person, who I trust that actually works in WWE, said to me that some people said that LA Knight was surprised when he heard that he got diagnosed with COVID, that he just thought he had a little bit of a cold. Like, and I'm sure a lot of you out there, these days, compared to 3+ years ago, you'll know some people that get tested positive, like, I didn't even realize I had it. You know, like, some people get it, and in hand, everybody is, you know, different with it. LA Knight is in such tremendous shape that obviously helps him. But if he is good enough to go Friday, he doesn't even have to have a match Friday, but if he is well enough that he could show up Friday, he could show up and sign the contract. And LA Knight will be put in a match at Fastlane. Or what they can do is, if LA Knight is not ready to return Friday, or if they really want to milk this, they could have the match go into Fastlane with John Cena in a handicap match against Solo and Jimmy Uso. And then at Fastlane, we get the LA Knight surprise. AJ Styles, they pretty much wrote him off TV. Being brought, taken out the way he did, neck brace, stretcher, ambulance, to show up the following Friday that he is back for revenge. Honestly, I think they're going to treat AJ Styles like they treated Ricochet tonight on Raw. If you didn't see Raw tonight, Ricochet came out on crutches, selling the injury that Shinsuke Nakamura gave him, smashing his knee in the ring post with a chair last week. And now Ricochet is out. And they are basically preparing the future of Shinsuke Nakamura. That once Ricochet is ready to return, he has unfinished business with Shinsuke Nakamura. So that keeps Ricochet in the back rearview mirror for Shinsuke Nakamura. And that's probably the way he'll go with that. But as of right now, they're advertising it as a handicap match. The rumor of Randy Orton is a long shot, and honestly, if Fastlane was taking place in Saudi Arabia or India, I would say yes, because it's more of a spectacle. I could see the possibility of Cena and Orton to please, you know, you get $100 million. $100 million, the amount of money that they get from Saudi Arabia, I don't think people sometimes think about how many events they got to do to equal one event in Saudi Arabia. You get that kind of money, you walk to Saudi Arabia. So that I could see. But for Fastlane, you are not doing that. You're not doing that. It's not happening. So, all right. We've gone an hour already. Let's start filling in the blanks a little bit with tonight's Raw. By the way, as I said earlier, this week in wrestling history, couple of little plugs if you're interested. Here is some photo highlights. As I said earlier, Jim Cornette made his managerial debut 41 years ago today, and his first ever client that he managed was Sensational Sherry. And yes, this week in history, This Is Your Life, The Rock took place. What did it score? 8.1 rating or 8.4? It scored an insane number. And if any of you out there, you know, if you want to hear a clip of Jim Cornette, I only play like 15, 20 seconds of it. But, you know, you can't expect him to be polished, you know, in his managerial debut. But, you know, this was 41 years ago today, and this is what Jim Cornette sounded like when he first debuted.
To go with our opening bout in just a moment, but we wanted to bring you up to date, as we had introduced some time ago, you folks, to Jimmy Cornette, who was interested in getting into the wrestling business as a manager. Jimmy, we've had a couple of rough sessions out here. Hopefully today we won't have a repeat of
anything. Well, Lance, today we're not going to have a repeat of anything that I've had before. We're going to have some success today because I am so happy. What have I been coming out here and telling you that I was going to do?
You are looking for talent.
Don't interrupt me. I have been coming out here and I've been telling you, and if these people would be quiet, you're not even going to upset me today. I'm happy because I've been telling you that I wanted champions, and today I have not one but two champions, Lance. Do you understand that?
And
I'm happy
signed.
About it, that I have signed up, and I would like to introduce one of them right now, and I'm going to bring her out.
Her
one
out.
Half of the North American
her
Tag
out.
Team Champions, Miss Sherry Martel, and she is lovely, isn't she, Lance?
Yeah.
Come on over.
Indeed. And now you,
yes.
Sherry Martel, and
you know the
manager,
reason
Jimmy Cornette,
that the other half of the North American Tag Team Champions ladies division is not here today, besides the fact that these people couldn't take two girls this good looking in one place, is because she had to go to the hairdresser. But I assure you, she will be joining us shortly. And Lance,
all right, you can go on YouTube, you can watch the whole video segment. Also this week in history, Steve Austin drove the Zamboni Express, the Zamboni. Ronnie Garvin won the NWA Championship. Vince McMahon getting caught by The Undertaker and Kane, giving them the middle finger behind their back. CM Punk made his OVW debut today. Well, I think it happened today, but it was this week in wrestling history. And if you're curious, you know, when they actually, OVW was the farm system for WWE. And back when he debuted in OVW, they actually name-dropped Ring of Honor. And you actually hear that they brought up Ace Steel as well. Now, I'm not going to play the match, but if you just want to hear the opening introductions for CM Punk, this is how CM Punk was introduced to OVW, which obviously led to his WWE debut. And I'll say one other thing. Tomorrow, the 26th of September, is the anniversary. Drew McIntyre signed with WWE. Drew McIntyre debuted in OVW the 26th of September back in 07. Drew McIntyre, you know how long he stood in OVW before he came to the main roster? 2 weeks. The middle of October, Vince McMahon brought out the Chosen One. So if you want to revisit that, you could check out This Week in History. But Drew McIntyre was in OVW about 2 weeks before he was introduced to the main roster. But if you want to hear CM Punk and how he was introduced to OVW and the WWE farm system at that time, this is how this went down.
Has made his way out to the square circle. Let's go to the ring for the announcement. Introducing first from Asbury Park, New Jersey, Danny Inferno.
Oh, Danny Inferno. Blast from the past, Danny Inferno.
And his opponent. Danny Inferno, not somebody to mess with. A lot of people don't realize this 28-year-old has already been wrestling professionally for 15 years. And you hear the crowd response to CM Punk. The man from the Windy City, Chicago, Illinois.
Right.
I've heard a lot about this young man.
Well, I know a lot about him. I'll tell you, Punk was trained by Ace Steel at the Steel Domain. Some of the things that Punk is known for was an incredible feud that he had with Raven. The infamous Raven, that feud put Punk on the map. But Punk's actions, as deplorable as they were so bad they brought the veteran Ricky Steamboat back out of retirement.
Here's the opponent from Chicago, Illinois, CM Punk.
Think about it, Dean. How bad do you have to be to bring another man out of retirement to be willing to teach you a lesson?
All right, we'll leave it that. By the way, Ricky Steamboat coming out of retirement. Gee, where did I hear that recently? Okay, we continue. This week in wrestling history, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara, get this, a week after Steve Austin came out on the Zamboni, a week after This Is Your Life, The Rock, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara decide to leave WWE to go to WCW. That is legit. This week in history, Hulk Hogan quit TNA. This week in history, Kerwin White makes his debut. And look at that young Dolph Ziggler. Look at that young Dolph Ziggler. Oh, my God. That happened this week in history. It is not on my photo synopsis, but this week in history, we started getting vignettes of this.
Looking at £106,000 of raw, unbridled energy. Only a machine this powerful can tame the rugged earth. Only a man this rugged can tame the machine. Some men move furniture. This man moves mountains. He's Steven Regal, a real man's man. No additives, no concentrates. You won't find this man pouring juice from a cardboard container. Oh, no, he squeezes his own hand-selected Florida oranges and savors his extraction, pulp and all. He's Steven Regal, a real man's man.
Those were good. Those were good, man. I missed that. Yeah, here's a picture of a very young Drew McIntyre, the chosen one. Sid Vicious, that was supposed to be his car, everyone. Goldberg! Yeah, that's CM Punk. Yeah, there's some history with him with WWE this week as well. I got two more for you. One is a little bit of a trivia with a beautiful ending that a lot of people would not know about. I'm going to share with you in a minute. But this week in history, this happened. Does anybody remember this match? It was Triple H against the British Bulldog. Special guest referee was The Rock. It's one of my favorite moments on Raw history. Just listen to about a minute of it and tell me if you remember this night.
What in the world was Vince McMahon thinking, naming The Rock as a special referee?
Hey, Triple H brought this all upon himself, so did the Bulldog.
This match may never end!
And look at Bulldog. What strength!
Uh-oh.
And Triple H now from behind.
Oh, SmackDown. SmackDown, sorry. Not Raw, it's SmackDown.
Bulldog, he's set up. Pedigree! And that would be it. Triple H rolls him over, folks. This one's over. Hook to the leg. And
hey, you got quite a round of applause there.
The Rock is clapping. For Triple H's pedigree.
We appreciate that move.
And Triple H is irate.
The Rock is giving Triple H a big hand. Oh, yeah.
And Triple H went for the Rock and hits the Rock again. And the two are hammering away. The People's Champ now with the upper hand. The Rock off the ropes. Oh, look out. Champ is going to
be coming back here. He wants the headset again.
Well, the special guest referee and commentator, The Rock, is
when they start to get sassy. The Rock puts him in his place. Look at Bulldog showing the resilience right here. Look, listen to The Rock's fans. The Rock's got to go do his job.
There's two. There's three. There's four. The Bulldog's the new WWF champion right here, right now.
Wait. One.
Oh, my God. That was epic at that time. Oh, my God. We fucking bursted out laughing. That was one of the funniest moments. The reason why I said Raw is because I'm always used to Jerry Lawler being on Raw. And one more. Just one more. This is only a minute. But the sexual innuendos behind it is interesting. I'm curious if anybody knows what this led to, what the name of this was. Who remembers this?
Val, I know what you've got in your pants, and I want it.
What? What? No. Hey. That's a pretty good line.
Wait, let me make that a little bit clearer. I know what you got in your pants, and damn it, I need it.
What, wait a minute here. He's going to have to get in line, actually.
Oh, so now you're going to be shy. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will turn my back, just whip it out and give it to me.
Holy mackerel! This is your life, Mick Foley.
Mick, turn back around and look at me.
Hey, he's already got two girls back there doing that.
The Big Belboski does never swings that way.
But let me describe it for you, okay? It's about this long.
What? How does he know?
It's white.
White?
And it's got a big, beautiful head on it.
What? Wait a minute.
And I'll tell you what, damn it. Either you reach into your pants, you whip it out, and you place it in my hand.
Mick, this is network TV.
Oh, so help me. I'll reach into your pants, I'll whip it out, and I'll stick it in your mouth.
What?
Whoa, Mick. Whoa.
Yeah. Shout out to Gordon Post. He was the first one to put it out there. Mr. Rocco. Not Mr. Sacco, but Mr. Rocco. And, you know, for those out there who used to make fun of that, there's a little beautiful story behind Mr. Rocco. I don't know if a lot of you are aware of this, but this was a tweet that Mick Foley put out a couple of years ago, not that long ago. And there was a wrestling fan in Staten Island who passed away from muscular dystrophy. Was a huge fan of WWE and Mick Foley. And this fan who died, young fan as well, was buried with the jacket that Mick Foley was wearing in his photo. And Rocco was buried with him as well. I'm telling you, there's a lot of little things that, you know, you never hear about with Mick Foley. Yes, he tweeted this, but... You know, how many of you remember a couple of years ago any websites reporting about this? I know we brought it up briefly, but it's not something that I'm sure most of you were even aware of. So I just figured I'd share it. I think it was definitely worth it. But, you know, anybody that's a little older or maybe you used to watch like Three's Company shows or reruns, that skit was very Three's Company-ish, if you remember that show. But, okay. Let's start wrapping this up a little bit. We got to talk about ratings as well. We got some very interesting ratings news this week, but let's talk briefly about Raw tonight. Raw opens up the show with Cody Rhodes, and again, can't stop talking about Jey Uso. I know 2 weeks in a row Dominic interrupted him. But he says the arrival of Jey Uso meant that someone is getting drafted to SmackDown, as we said earlier. It also meant that it was going to be a disgruntled locker room. But he said, you know, some people thought that Jey Uso should have been allowed to just sink, you know, just be done. But that wasn't Cody Rhodes. Cody's not the best of friends with Jey Uso. And if people want to think of other reasons why Cody brought him to Raw, so be it. But he said, we're not in the bottom of the third inning anymore. So that's a little dig to Paul Heyman's comment. That obviously is a dig, you know, reminding people of the seed planted that Cody Rhodes still wants Roman Reigns. Even though the words Roman Reigns don't get out of Cody Rhodes' mouth much anymore. Cody starts bringing up that the Judgment Day is the most toxic faction ever. Toxic? I think a lot of us love the Judgment Day faction. We just don't love it being shoved down our throats with the same format week in and week out and week in and week out. But Cody calls them the most toxic faction ever. This brings the Judgment Day out there. And just to piss people off even more, when Dominic is about to talk, they turn the amplitude for the fans' crowd noise up tenfold. This time it was so loud you couldn't even hear Dominic talk. Soon you're just going to hear, I have crowd boo sound noise, but I'm going to save it for tonight. But they just intentionally amped it all the way up so you couldn't even hear Dominic talk. Finn Balor, Damian Priest, they don't appreciate Cody getting involved in their business. And Cody Rhodes says that the Judgment Day isn't a real family. Dominic had a real family, and they can't even stand him. And Cody Rhodes says, you know, everybody in Judgment Day is putting their titles on the line tonight. You know, how would Mammy feel? How would Mommy feel if they end up leaving tonight empty-handed? So obviously this triggers Dominic. They all want to beat the crap out of Cody, and then we get the rinse and repeat. This time around, they all get on the apron, and before they could beat on Cody Rhodes, here is Jey Uso trying to make the save after what happened last week. So Jey Uso hits the ring, but Judgment Day realizes, hey, it's still 3-on-2. So they climb the apron again, and they're about to beat down Cody and Jey. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn jump the guardrail, and they get in the ring. So now it's 4-on-3. Judgment Day retreats, goes up the rampway. Here comes JD McDonagh with a chair. He's got two chairs, gives one to Finn Balor. He nods to Finn Balor, let's go take care of business. And Damian Priest is like, don't do it. Don't do it. They hit the ring. They get beat down. So now Dominic is getting his ass handed to him. JD McDonagh is getting his ass handed to him. And now Damian Priest is forced to go make the save. Finn Balor is already laid out. JD McDonagh is laid out. Dominic Mysterio is laid out. Damian Priest ends up being surrounded by Cody, Jey, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn. And he ends up eating a super kick from Jey Uso, a chair shot from Cody Rhodes, and Damian Priest gets out of Dodge. Damian Priest is pissed the fuck off. Later on, he's in the back with Finn, Dominic, and JD McDonagh, and he's reading the riot act to JD McDonagh. You're not in Judgment Day. Get out of here. Nobody wants you here. That would come back into play for the main event tonight. But just keep that on your brain. Bronson Reed. This was the Battle of the Titans. It was fun while it lasted. That is the tail of the tape. Very, very even. When you see this, now obviously they're intentionally, I'm putting some numbers similar. They're both not exactly 330 pounds. They both don't bench press exactly 600 pounds. Their chest area, I think, is a little bit off. Otis having a bigger neck, possibly. But when you see this, anybody agree with me that down the line, Otis and Bronson Reed would be a very interesting tag team? Not necessarily like Earthquake and Typhoon, but I actually would be interested in seeing them as a tag team in the future. But they put on a 4-minute match today. It was a fun match, but it was your typical Otis match, getting some offense, Bronson getting a little bit of his offense, a lot of Battle of the Giants, you know, a lot of, you know, hitting each other, nobody moves, a lot of power moves. But towards the end of the match, Otis hits the Caterpillar, but misses the Vader Bomb. And you're not going to have Chad Gable lose last week and Otis win this week and make Chad Gable feel or come across as one step below Otis. So when Otis misses the Vader Bomb, here comes Bronson Reed with the Senton and the Tsunami. 1, 2, it doesn't matter. No, 1, 2, 3. Bronson Reed gets the win. Later on in the night, after Ludwig Kaiser's match, there's a little backstage segment. They're revisiting Ludwig Kaiser, you know, trying to like sweet talk Maxine Dupri a little bit. This time around is a little bit different because besides Otis losing, oh, Ludwig Kaiser lost too. little out of place, but Tommaso Ciampa beats Ludwig Kaiser. Once again, Giovanni Vinci gets involved. It backfires. Ludwig Kaiser doesn't want Vinci anywhere near his match. He takes his eye off the ball. Ciampa defeats Ludwig Kaiser. Ciampa is going to get a title shot against Gunther. Should be at Fastlane. Hopefully it's not the night after, or the Raw after Fastlane. It should be Fastlane, even though they did not say that tonight. So there's always that possibility it doesn't happen here. But Fastlane, it seems underwhelming, even with two matches announced besides. I think you got to put Gunther on this card. But Ciampa wants a shot at Gunther's title. And later on in the night, Gunther is reading the Riot Act to Vinci, but he's also reading the Riot Act to Kaiser. Kaiser's actually, I tell you, I didn't take a screenshot tonight, but if you look at Ludwig Kaiser standing next to Gunther, you know, the right camera shot, Kaiser looks taller than Gunther. Gunther has that deceivingly looking height, like Rhea Ripley. Like, a lot of people think Rhea Ripley is extremely tall, and Rhea Ripley is not. I think Rhea Ripley is, what, 5'7"? So Gunther, if you see him standing next to Kaiser, take note next time. They are very, very close in height, very close. Kaiser, when he stands on an angle, he is built. I mean, he's got the look. But Gunther is so angry at Vinci and Kaiser, he wants to take care of Tommaso Ciampa all by himself, which is going to be great, because when that match goes down, if we do not have the interference from Imperium, that could top what we saw at NXT Stand and Deliver a couple of years ago. But Ciampa gets a win tonight. Kaiser gets the loss. We had a couple of segments tonight with Tegan Knox. And as we talked about on Saturday, that was just awful, the reports going around that she was released. It was not true. And tonight, they kind of made up for it a little bit. Tegan Knox was supposed to face Becky Lynch last week. You and I talked about it last Monday. The reason why the match was changed is because if Tegan Knox would have came out just as a random person and challenged Becky Lynch, it would have gotten no reaction, almost no reaction. And he didn't want Becky Lynch's first NXT Women's Championship title defense on the main roster on Raw to get crickets. So they decided to go with Natty instead. And tonight, it helped Tegan Knox tonight. Natty, oof. I like Natty, but that was kind of brutal tonight. It was kind of brutal. Tegan Knox is in the back. Becky Lynch is polishing her belt. Tegan Knox shows up. And Becky Lynch looks at Tegan Knox and she says, you know, I put out an open challenge last week and I saw you by the curtain. Why didn't you come out? And Tegan Knox, the storyline is, well, Natty was there too. And because Natty is a veteran, I let her have the match. And Becky is giving some words of inspiration to Tegan Knox. You know, you got to be hungry. You got to go for this. You got to go for that. So Tegan Knox, you know, says, Becky, I know you have a championship match this weekend against Tiffany Stratton in NXT No Mercy. If you beat her, I would love the opportunity to face you. So Becky Lynch is fine with that. We go to commercial. We come back from commercial, and we get another segment with Tegan Knox. This time, she's with Adam Pearce. She wants the match, the winner of Becky and Tiffany Stratton. And Natalya shows up. And this was, I mean, we know we get scripted promos, but this was one of the most forced scripted promos that I have seen. Even though Raquel Rodriguez's promo 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, was pretty awful. We talked about that. Natalya shows up. For some reason, you know, she's extremely angry, extremely pissed. And she's like, you know, who are you to, like, get a title shot? Adam Pearce, I want my rematch against Becky Lynch. Why would you get a rematch? You didn't lose a title. You lost your championship. Just, it didn't make sense. It was a forced anger between Tegan Knox and Natalya just so they could have a match tonight. So Natalya is, for some reason, it's that time in a month that she's angry as hell. And Tegan Knox says, you know, she don't want any problem with Natalya. Natalya feels like she deserves the opportunity. So they're arguing, and Adam Pearce says, why don't you take it to the ring? Whoever wins tonight will get that shot. And Natalya, with one of the most fed, you know, like choreographed lines, Tegan, I hope she's hungry tonight and forgets her manners. If I did that in promo class, get the fuck out of here. Get out of here. I hope she's hungry tonight and she forgets her manners. It was goofy. Anyway, Tegan Knox beats her. Decent little match. Only 2.5 minutes. Becky Lynch taking in the match. Little commentary. But this did help Tegan Knox. Nice little reaction. Nice rub from Becky Lynch. A lot of people felt bad for her over the weekend. You know, the rumors that she was released. So she actually has a little bit of momentum going into next week, because she will take on Becky Lynch next week. There's no way Becky Lynch is losing the NXT Women's Championship this soon. But they had to give a reason to get to Becky Lynch versus Tegan Knox, and they felt this was the best way to do it. All right. Continuing on, Seth Rollins, Shinsuke Nakamura. Seth Rollins comes out wearing what looked like a red garbage bag. With the way, even though I got to be honest with you, that actually does look like a pretty cool looking look, even though it's very, very flamboyant. Seth Rollins, did it feel like he was a little extra flamboyant on the microphone tonight? And he's telling him, if you're sick of seeing Shinsuke Nakamura ducking him, sing my song. And they all start singing. And that if it's time for me to defend the world title, sing it louder. But the way he was talking, you would have never thought that he was extremely pissed off and irate last week. But the crowd is serenading him. Seth Rollins wants to know Shinsuke Nakamura's demands to have the rematch. And we get on the video screen Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke Nakamura, little pre-recorded video, very, very well produced, saying Seth Rollins was impatient, revealed all his cards. Shinsuke Nakamura, he's going to show his card. He wants a match so brutal, painful, for Seth Rollins that he will never walk again. He will have a conclusion so humiliating that his daughter would be ashamed to look at him. Shinsuke Nakamura looks at the screen and he announces that at WWE Fastlane, it will be Last Man Standing. And Seth Rollins, a little bit of a pause. A little tidbit. Seth Rollins has never had a Last Man Standing match before. This is a first for him. So they're probably going to get a little bit extra creative in this match. No problem with it whatsoever. But Seth Rollins, he feels, hey, they know I love them, but I love this. And Shinsuke Nakamura thinks he played his cards perfectly, but he made a critical mistake. And suddenly, Seth Rollins claims his back being injured is not a weakness, but a strength. It's the only way his family would be ashamed of him if he didn't give everything that he's got. Every time he steps in a ring, he knows it could be his last. But he knows, and people caught this, because he's got this, he is the best in the world. Social media blew up at that. Did he just take a shot at CM Punk? Could we be on a collision course to WrestleMania? Possibly. But Seth Rollins, his challenge accepted. So at WWE Fastlane, it will be last man standing. Shinsuke Nakamura versus Seth Rollins. So, okay. As I said earlier, Ricochet was interviewed. He was on crutches. That once he's ready to return, he has unfinished business with Shinsuke Nakamura. Dominic Mysterio, as we said early in the show, beat Dragon Lee in an incredible match. I love everything about it. I loved because it showed how far Dominic has come. It showed what Dragon Lee could actually do, but it also gave us a really beautiful crowd that was into it. And again, it gave me a little bit of those AEW vibes with those over-the-top, high-flying matches. You don't see them as much in WWE as you think you do. And that crowd reaction tonight is a little bit different than you normally hear with WWE. They gave it awesome chance a few times, which was great. But in the end, Dragon Lee, when people thought that he might actually pull this out, he gets dumped on the top rope. Gets crotched on the top rope, falls in the ring. Dominic immediately climbs the top rope, hits the frog splash. Before you knew it, the match was over. And, you know, it was interesting when you look at the crowd reaction because they were booing the shit out of Dominic, but a lot of people were cheering because they knew that they saw something special. Michael Cole interviews Nia Jax, and Nia Jax, she calls herself the baddest human in the WWE. She can't say woman because we may see her beating down men in the future. You know, they kind of teased that before. Not going to do it yet. But she starts running down the list of people that she has already taken out. Rhea Ripley should be returning soon. Zoe Stark comes out. And Zoe Stark, you know, hey, they're trying to get her over as a babyface. At the house shows last week, she was playing the heel, if you saw the video that I put up. They're trying to get her over as a babyface, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think it's working. Her and Shayna Baszler, she comes out no-nonsense. And that's not a negative, but she doesn't have that kind of charisma to get over as a badass babyface. Shayna Baszler pulls it off a little bit, but you got to understand, Shayna Baszler has been in the WWE machine for quite some time, and she's developed a nice relationship with the fans. She's on social media. She interacts with fans. They know that she absolutely eats, sleeps, shits this. You know, Zoe Stark is still new on the main roster, so she could get in anybody's face, and the crowd will be like, oh, yeah, okay. So she's not afraid of Nia Jax. So tonight we get the in-ring return of Nia Jax. She defeats Zoe Stark in a decent match. You know, and by the way, the Banzai drop, much, much better this week. For those that don't know why I say that, I didn't even notice this until I heard a few wrestlers on their podcasts talking about it. Jim Cornette in particular, I'm not gushing over Cornette, but he managed Yokozuna. So his caught my eye more than anything. But when Yokozuna used to do the Banzai drop, you hold on to the ropes, the top rope, and you also land a certain way. So you don't put all your true weight on someone's chest or stomach area. And Nia Jax, when she did the Banzai drop originally, she just launched. She just launched. Tonight, she held that rope, and even when she, and I kind of enjoyed this, when she landed on Zoe Stark, she bounced up, almost like one of those, anybody remember the hoppity horses when we were kids? That yellow horse, the hoppity horse or hippity horse, whatever it was called, she bounced up, and I actually thought it was good. She had a good match today. Listen, there's some people out there, they got this hatred for her, that you're not going to change their minds. I respect that. Gordon says hippity hop. That's what it was. So, but Nia Jax, I thought, had a decent match with Zoe Stark as long as it lasted, but it was okay. Drew McIntyre, outside of Miz TV, rinse and repeat this week. We got Miz TV with Drew McIntyre. Miz is trying to chum up, you know, buddy it up with Drew McIntyre. And Drew, I mean, honestly, guys, sounded like what Bronson Reed told Miz a long time ago and others. You know, Miz, you're nothing like me. You know, everybody does that to Miz. So Miz, you know, realizes he's not going to be on the best of terms with Drew McIntyre tonight. Miz is running down what happened last week with Jey Uso and Drew McIntyre in the match. And right when the Miz gets to the point where Drew McIntyre, well, when the Judgment Day was beating down Jey Uso, Drew McIntyre interrupts him and says, "Karma is a bitch." And Miz was like, whoa, you know, like he got a kick out of it. And the crowd, I think, was kind of like taken back because, you know, obviously it was, you could see it was like choreographed. I mean, a little too perfect. And Miz gets to that point, calm as a bitch. And he says nothing else. So Miz calls Drew McIntyre the Batman of the WWE, which means Cody Rhodes is the Superman of WWE. And Drew, by the way, how do you feel that Cody Rhodes showed you up last week? Because remember, Cody made the save for Jey Uso. So before Drew McIntyre could say anything, here comes the New Day. New Day comes out. They're reading a little bit of the riot act to Drew McIntyre. Xavier Woods claims that Drew McIntyre's balls have shrinked. And it was okay, but Kofi, you know, calling Drew McIntyre out for not making the save for Jey Uso, that Drew should have helped Jey Uso, I thought that was stupid. You know, because Drew McIntyre then responds, is like, "Do you remember what the judge, what the bloodline did to me and dude?" So, you know, why would Drew McIntyre want to save Jey Uso? And Kofi Kingston, you know, saying, "Oh, everything about you is good and, you know, you're not that person, this and that." And while this is all going on, Miz is trying to get some words in. And Miz, right after Kofi says something, Miz tries to talk and say something, like make a point. Drew McIntyre says, "Shut up, Miz." Kofi Kingston says something else. Before Drew could say a response, Miz tries to answer Kofi back. "Shut up, Miz." Does it three or four times. Actually did it three times. And then the fourth time, Kofi said something about the Miz. And the Miz does his usual, "When my hand goes up, your mouth goes." And before he could finish, Drew McIntyre headbutts him. So now everybody feels, oh, Drew McIntyre stole a babyface. No, not so quick. Drew McIntyre challenges Kofi. Get in the ring. We go to commercial. We come back. We have the impromptu match. Kofi Kingston against Drew McIntyre. Pretty much exact like last week. Just different characters, same story. We get an excellent match. Kofi and Drew, great match. Crowd was split. Towards the end of the match, here comes Ivar. Ivar shows up, starts beating the shit out of Xavier Woods at ringside, and Kofi takes notice. He's looking at Xavier Woods getting beat down. He takes his eye off of Drew McIntyre, just like when last week Jey Uso started getting at it with the Judgment Day, took his eye off the ball, and Drew McIntyre claymored Jey last week at the pin, or the week before. Actually, last week. So now Kofi takes the eye off of Drew McIntyre, and he's focused on Xavier Woods getting beat down by Ivar, and Valhalla's at ringside as well. And he turns around. He eats a claymore. 1, 2, 3. After the match is over, Drew McIntyre gets out of the ring quick as fuck like last week. Kofi is still in the ring, so Ivar hits the ring and starts beating the balls out of Kofi. And everybody is thinking, "Drew, make the save. You got to save Kofi from Ivar." And Drew McIntyre, he's got that "karma is a bitch" look on his face. He walks off. Ivar hits with the moonsault and squashes Kofi like a grape. So Miz opened up the segment saying, coward. Is he a coward? Drew McIntyre? Yeah, that's where they're going with it. Drew McIntyre is letting people get a little bit of karma. Later on, Ivar, little explanation in the back. Hey, eye for an eye. The New Day, you know, took out Eric. Eye for an eye. And that's all that was. Fans are starting to get a little heel heat to Drew McIntyre. They're taking their time. I know over the weekend, the house show, they had Omos go at it with Cody a little bit. I think it was just a fill-in because who was on the card, and they said, let's have these two go at it a little bit, just try it out. And hey, that may lead to something on TV. But I think in the very near future, we're going to see Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes. I think that match is on the horizon. Because if you're going to get Drew McIntyre over completely as a full-blown heel in this, you got to have him attack Cody Rhodes. The only bad thing about it is the Jey Uso aspect of it will be involved with it. So then, other than everything we talked about, we had the main event tonight. And listen, when you see so many matches involving the Judgment Day, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you know what you're going to get. It's the same formula. Crowd is always into it. They were into it at Payback. They're into it on Raw main events. At home, it's rinse and repeat. It gets a little bit, you know, maddening at times, seeing the same shit over and over and over again. But when you're live in the building, it's a different dynamic. So the crowds live at these events, even though you're getting similar types of matches, they're always energetic. At home, you're pretty much what you see is what you get. And tonight, we had the same type of match that we have seen before with these guys. A little different finish tonight because later on in the match, Dominic Mysterio shows up. Dominic gets involved in the match. JD McDonagh shows up. He gets involved outside the ring. Kevin Owens is laid out somewhat outside the ring. And here comes Jey Uso. Jey Uso starts beating on Dominic, starts beating on JD McDonagh. They get the upper hand on Jey Uso. Kevin Owens, if you look at the corner of your eye on the screen, Kevin Owens sees Jey Uso getting beat down. Kevin Owens doesn't do anything about it. He's not a fan of Jey Uso. Cody Rhodes shows up. Cody Rhodes dives outside the ring and takes out JD McDonagh. And we got a full-fledged clusterfuck going on. And then we start getting little teases that Owens and Zayn could possibly win this thing. Kevin Owens hits a stunner on Finn Balor, but Finn Balor falls outside the ring. Damian Priest throws Kevin Owens outside the ring, and then Sami Zayn nails him with a Huluva kick. And you look at the timer at 10:55, so we're almost off the air, and Sami Zayn is setting up in the corner. Damian Priest is laid out in the ring, and they had a good camera shot. The camera was right in the face of Sami Zayn. He's in the corner. He's about to set up, and he looks, and here's Jaden McDonagh. Remember what I said earlier when Damian Priest told Jaden McDonagh, get out of here. Jaden McDonagh, with Damian Priest laid out in the ring, wails Sami Zayn in the face with a belt. So Sami Zayn is knocked out. Damian Priest very slowly reaches over and covers Sami Zayn, and he gets pinned. So Finn Balor and Damian Priest retain their championships. And before you could even let it sink in, all hell breaks loose outside the ring. You got Jey Uso. You got Cody Rhodes. You got Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, JD McDonagh, Dominic Mysterio. They're all brawling. And right when we go off the air, Kevin Owens, I believe, hits a stunner on Dominic Mysterio. And it was interesting, the timing, because if you looked at it closely, I don't know if it was Dominic, but Kevin Owens threw somebody outside the ring, and he pretty much said, get the fuck out of the ring. Like, and as soon as he said, the camera went off the air. As soon as he said, it just, you couldn't hear anything, but you see Kevin Owens right on the screen. But it was just, this was a crazy pull apart. You know, nothing, you know, like you're going to remember, but it was a little more chaotic than usual, and it felt like it's setting up to for a Fastlane match. You know, sometimes when you see a pull apart, it's just your typical pull apart. You're going off the air and you get, you know, this felt like it may lead to a Fastlane match. Whether it's 3-on-3, could be 4-on-4. Could be 4-on-4. You could possibly get Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens versus the Judgment Day and JD McDonagh. That is a possibility. You know, when we talked about it at the very beginning of the show, we didn't even mention that. That could end up being, it could end up being an 8-man tag match. We'll see. You know, few people brought up earlier, few people bringing up now Survivor Series. I got to be honest with you. Unless you add another person in this, and no, I don't mean Rhea Ripley, I don't want to see War Games with those eight guys. I've seen so much of it on Raw. We had that street fight. We just had that street fight that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn lost to the Judgment. It was a fun match at Payback, but I don't want to see this go into November. Honestly, do you want to see these guys feuding until November? Put Cody Rhodes with Drew McIntyre. I mean, that's obviously going to have to take a couple of weeks to a month, but start moving these people away. What happened with the Judgment Day feuding with the Street Profits? Finn Balor and Damian Priest should be getting their asses on SmackDown a little bit more and away from Raw. So I don't know if I really want to see that. It's a, listen, if we didn't have as much as we did with the Judgment Day, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn this year, Survivor Series would have felt a little bit more special. But we have had so much of this. This is not the Bloodline War Games like last year. This is not the same vibe. This is, please, move on. I know Jey Uso is now the wild card in all of this, but even that, this is a little bit just ridiculous. I don't know. And you know what? I will say this, too. Why? I mean, look at Drew McIntyre. Look at some others. I'm just talking storyline right now. Think about when Sami Zayn was in the Bloodline. Think about when Sami Zayn was in the Bloodline. How come some wrestlers on Raw didn't have this uber bitterness for Sami Zayn for an extended period of time? Like when he started changing his ways and saw the light and kicked Roman Reigns, you're like, all was forgiven immediately. I mean, I know what some people could say, well, Jey Uso is Bloodline with Roman Reigns. I get it. But Sami Zayn also fucked a lot of people over, and for some reason they didn't hold any vendettas against him. Go back a year ago and think about all the people that he fucked over, and because he hit Roman Reigns, you know, all was forgiven. So this is just, it's a forced storyline, forced. And people kind of like let it go because it's Jey Uso and we like him. And, you know, he's main eventer now. And, you know, we, as long as he's on TV, it's cool and everything. But, you know, this storyline that he's this toxic, ugh, I don't know, man. I'm not liking it. I'm not liking it. Okay. Before we get into ratings, very, very quickly, tomorrow's preview for NXT. We got Trick Williams versus Joe Gacy. We have the contract signing between Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov. By the way, I'm going to do predictions for NXT on Wednesday's show. And I, as of right now, I'm hoping that Ilya dethrones Carmelo Hayes of that championship. Tomorrow, Gigi Dolan will take on Blair Davenport. We will have the finals in the Global Heritage Invitational Tournament. Butch, a.k.a. Pete Dunne, versus Joe Coffey. We're going to have a strap match tomorrow. You know, I kind of feel bad. Yeah, I kept calling him Javier Bernal, even though it's not. But we got a strap match tomorrow. Becky Lynch will be appearing, setting up her Extreme Rules match with Tiffany Stratton. Thea Hale is going to unveil her brand new look, and she's going to be taking on Danny Palmer. Hank and Tank will be taking on Lucien Price and Bronco Nima. And Baron Corbin will be taking on Josh Briggs. So I just figured I'd give you a little preview. Now, as far as AEW this week, very, very interesting. I've noticed this outside of last week. The last month or so, they have been getting a little bit lazy with their banner previews. They usually have everything lined up, and we usually put it on the screen and it gives you pretty much a good preview for Dynamite. This time around, they have just thrown out little drips and drabs. MJF and Adam Cole will appear. Julie Hart is taking on Willow Nightingale. Swerve Strickland and Hangman Page will have their contract signing because they are having a pay-per-view this weekend. Orange Cassidy versus Penta versus Austin Gunn versus Matt Jackson, and Christian Cage and Darby Allin will have a sit-down interview with Jim Ross because they're having a match this weekend as well. I will do predictions for Wrestle Dream this Wednesday too. Adam Cole's not wrestling Wednesday. They're going to be talking. His ankle is a little sore. I don't think it's severely injured, but they're just talking. I can't believe there's already a pay-per-view, but it is taking place this weekend, so we'll do predictions on Wednesday. As of right now, I don't expect to cover it live. I'm just surprised, all in and all out, you know, happening not that long ago, and we're already into another pay-per-view. So, but the card looks okay, so we'll talk about that on Wednesday. Now, remember Wednesday also, I will do predictions for NXT No Mercy. Tomorrow night, after the watch party, Kevin and I will be recording the DTKC show. And let's briefly get into ratings. Very interesting numbers this week. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Some people drew great. Some people drew surprisingly low. Raw last week did 1,331,000. That might be the lowest in history. That is down from the week prior is 1,353,000. The high point from last week's Raw was Cody Rhodes and Dominic Mysterio, the finish of that match, and then the post-match antics with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn making the save. That did 1,456,000. The low point of last week was Giovanni Vinci versus Tommaso Ciampa. That did 1,191,000. And by the way, I tell it like it is, Becky Lynch versus Natalya last week lost 150,000 viewers. It never recovered because Ciampa and Vinci, which followed, which led into the Drew McIntyre, Jey Uso match, and Jey Uso making his decision with Judgment Day, only 80,000 fans returned. So once you lost that 150,000 viewers with Becky versus Natalya, half of them never came back. So I just wanted to point that out. NXT last week did 824,000 viewers. That is slightly down from the week prior's 850. And by the way, Dominic Mysterio outdrew Becky Lynch last week. Becky Lynch drew about 800 26,000, 830,000. She teamed up with Lyra Valkyria versus Kiana James and Tiffany Stratton. But Dominic Mysterio versus Carmelo Hayes, that drew 913,000 viewers. That was the high point of last week's NXT. The low point of last week's NXT was Joe Coffey versus Duke Hudson versus Nathan Frazier. That drew 750,000 viewers. AEW Dynamite last week, hey, good for them. They had several quarters over a million. They did 984,000. That is up from the week prior's 888. The high point last week, Samoa Joe versus MJF, which did 1,019,000. Now let that sink in. The average rating was 984. The high was 1,019. That's not that much different. That's only, what, 25,000, 35,000 viewers. What does that tell you? There was no big peaks or valleys. Because the low point last week was Saraya versus Toni Storm. That did 937,000. So for the whole 2 hours, they pretty much maintained. That is great. Because a lot of Dynamites and a lot of collisions, when you get to the end, psh, they kept it. They did a good placement of matches last week. Now, this is sad. I prepped you on Saturday because I had the rating, and we talked about it last Saturday too. Night two of Impact Wrestling celebrating their 1,000th show. Only did 104,000 viewers, and their demo, and as I always say, I don't talk about demos unless it's newsworthy. Their demo was 0.008. Less than 0.01. The only lower is 0.00. They gained no 18 to 40. They lost 18 to 49 viewers for the 2 weeks that they celebrated the 1,000th anniversary, 1,000th episode of Impact. At minimum, you would have thought maybe fans that were in their 20s and 30s, you know, 15 years ago, decide, hey, for nostalgic purposes, let me tune in. They lost viewers. That is crazy when you think about it. New Japan just fell off the cliff. New Japan did 53,000 viewers, down from the week prior, 75,000. Their viewers almost half of what they were a month ago. Rampage this past Friday, Grand Slam Rampage. Dynamite hit a home run in the ratings. Rampage struck out. No other way to put it. They scored 341,000 viewers. That is only up by 6,000 viewers. They gave us a two-hour show with a solid Dynamite-type card, and it only drew 341,000 viewers. First hour scored 374. Hour two only scored 309. And I got more to share with you about Rampage. This is pretty startling. The high point of Rampage on Friday was Luchasaurus and Christian versus Darby Allin and Sting. That opened up Rampage. That did 434,000 viewers. The low point of Rampage, once again, The Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. They took on the Dark Order. That drew 282,000 viewers. That is horrendous. Not only that, if you get your hands on the quarter hours for that night, the show just steadily declined the entire night. It started with 434. It ended with 307. And get this, the Young Bucks and Hangman Page winning the Ring of Honor six-man tag titles only scored 307,000 viewers, and that's only 2,000 viewers more than Bear Bronson versus Santana. So even Hangman Page and the Young Bucks couldn't even draw 310,000 viewers. Just let that sink in. We go to SmackDown. SmackDown scored 2,227,000 viewers. That is down from the week prior's 2,569,000. The high point of SmackDown this past Friday was Io Sky versus Asuka and the backstage segment with Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso, and Adam Pearce. That did 2,371,000 viewers. The low point of SmackDown was Austin Theory and Grayson Waller versus the Brawling Brutes. That followed Io Sky and Asuka. That match dropped 260,000 viewers. Overall, it was 2,120,000. Just think about that. Brawling Brutes versus Grayson Waller and Austin Theory, which immediately followed Io versus Asuka, lost 260,000 viewers. But get this. You thought shortly after that we had Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa, destroying AJ Styles, destroying John Cena to go off the air. They only gained back 80,000 viewers. In fact, let me sink one more into you. Other than the tag team match that scored low for the night, Waller and Theory versus the Brawling Brutes, every other quarter, except for one, drew higher than John Cena. People realize you're going to stretch out a match. Yeah, it's happening in a fast lane, but they don't want 3-4 weeks of nothing. For the live crowd, having seen it in person is great. At home, you know, when you've gone that long, you don't have a lot of kids every week for a couple of years. Is Cena going to be on this week? No, son. Is Cena going to be on this week? No, daughter. Is Cena going to be on this week? No, maybe at WrestleMania. Is Cena going to be on this week? You know, people think that because Cena returns, suddenly, you know, everybody's going to, at least 200,000 people may return to see, hey, what's Cena doing? Every quarter was higher except for one. Flight to Win, welcome to the family. Much love to you. Flight to Win. Good timing. Because tomorrow you'll get the Patreon show, and then you'll get Wednesday Night Dynamite, and then we have predictions next week for Fastlane. So it'll be part of that contest. So now we get to Collision. Collision's rating from this past Saturday won't be available till tomorrow, but the week prior, you'll find this interesting. The week prior, they scored 467,000 viewers. The high point from the September 16th Collision was the Jay White-Andrade confrontation and the Hardys versus the Righteous. That drew 501,000 viewers. The low point for Collision, not that much lower, but 71,000 viewers is a decent amount. The low point of Collision, Bryan Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli versus Ricky Starks and Big Bill. That did 430,000 viewers. And if you think, because it opened up Collision, that maybe just fans were late to tune in, as the match went on, it lost viewers. Remember what we said 2 weeks ago? As much as I love Bryan Danielson, I think Bryan Danielson is the number one guy right now outside of MJF in AEW. You could put him on Collision. You could put Jesus Christ on Collision. You could put the devil on Collision. You could put them all together. You could put Edge on Collision. You know, ultimately, you know, unless it's absolutely must see, gotta see, check it out, people are just going to skip it. It's not big enough where people are going to stop what they're doing and watch it real time live. You know, watch it on a replay is all cool and everything, but tell that to a TV network when it's airing prime time live and you got advertisers. So. Okay, big shout out to Eric Williams. He said he DM'd me about the Terry Funk estate sale. I will definitely check that out. Thank you for the two spot. I will check it out. I'm curious to see what's involved. I mean, I have a ton of Terry Funk. you know, personal memorabilia that, you know, I would never part with. I'd rather just, you know, throw it away. Well, not throw it away, but just give it away once I'm long gone from here. But, you know, if there's something like really, really cool that I would love to have for my collection, I could afford it. You know, I just don't have money like that laying around, you know, but I'm going to check it out, see what's available. I could only imagine. It's probably a lot of shirts, a lot of branding irons, you know, things like, because trust me, I have so many personal things from Terry. I'm looking at a couple of them right now. You pretty much knew what he had, because sometimes he would send you something that he never sold, but, you know, something that he had made up. But, you know, he wasn't pouring in the money. A lot of people think that his illustrious career, he became a millionaire from it. He didn't have it like that. You'd be surprised. He was live comfortable, absolutely live comfortable. But, you know, and being put in the home, you know, definitely drained a lot of money as well. But, you know, he's in a better place, man, much better place. So there's so much Terry Funk memorabilia online that you could buy. But if I could get something, you know, personal, yeah, it'd be pretty cool. But I'm going to check that out. I appreciate you letting me know about that. So, all right. With that said, wow, we went over 2 hours. Jesus, it's 1:15 in the morning. Man, I got to get up early. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You know, I'm back 2 weeks from my vacation, and I feel like we're only now starting to get back into the swing of things. So, you know, definitely check out Saturday's episode if you didn't hear the discussion on the releases. Great discussion there. And we're going to have to wait 90 days for just about everyone to see what their next move is. Let the rumors fly. Let the rumors fly. Because people think that someone will be an ideal fit somewhere. You will see the reports that, you know, oh, our sources tell us that, you know, that so-and-so is interested. You know, most of it is just common sense, obviously. So, all right, everybody. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. If you're part of our Patreon family, you're welcome to join us tomorrow for this live stream of the DTKC show. Otherwise, go to DonTony.com on Wednesday and you'll be able to get it there. And keep supporting DonTony.com, everyone out there. You know, take a moment, download, you know, the episodes, the current episodes, because that is what keeps me in business. That's the lifeline. And like I showed you earlier, you know, breaking the top 40, even with all the numbers scattered, is awesome. It's even worth me showing one last time before we go off the air. I mean, I've been telling you this for 2 weeks, and I knew it. I knew it. You know, I mean, I love doing the video side of things, and I have no intentions on ending that anytime soon. But if I just kept everything in one place and just had audio only, we'd be back in the top 10. I really believe that. Top 15 at minimum. So the fact that we're so scattered with numbers and break the top 40 again is beautiful. And I thank you all for that. And that's something I cannot finagle. So I really appreciate it. And, you know, your support just makes me want to work even harder. So Hada, Hada, Hada. What movie is that from, guys? Hada. I'll give you a hint. It rhymes with head.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're going to get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now, that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.